Between the 8th and the 10th of June this year, Enlit Africa hosted a digital event in which we examined the role of the 5 Ds of the energy transition in Africa. These Ds being democratization, digitalization, decarbonization, decentralization, and deregulation. Unfortunately, on the day, the Honourable Minister Gwede Mantashe was unable to join us as originally planned. However, the Director General of the Department of Mineral Resources and Energy, Advocate Thabo Mokoena, shared the following message with the audience.
South Africa fully appreciates the risks of climate change to current and also future generations, and the need for a transition to a low-carbon economy. Our National Development Plan commits South Africa to a transition to a lower carbon intensive economy, and we recognize the important role that diverse options and technologies can play as we embark on decarbonization efforts in our chemicals, transport, and also energy sectors. While we recognize the challenges posed by climate change and the imperatives for taking action, we equally appreciate that given our country's developmental needs, coal power generation, which currently represents around 74% as part of our generation mix, and out of this 74%, we have 56 gigawatt, which is the total energy installed to capacity or to the grid. And this still remains a key resource for the country, followed by the renewables with 15%, oil with 7%, and nuclear with 3%. In the same breath, our updated 2019 Integrated Resource Plan sets a clear path towards a lower carbon electricity sector by 2030. The plan commits 22.9 gigawatt of new renewable energy, and we also have natural gas with a contribution of 3 gigawatt. And we have coal with a 1.5 gigawatt contribution as well. Ladies and gentlemen, the IRP also includes the decommissioning of about 10 gigawatt of old coal-fired power plants and adding an installed 2 gigawatt of storage. Thus, the implementation of the IRP 2019 is expected to generate a substantial change in the power sector generation mix and consequently in the livelihood of thousands of people that directly and indirectly depend on the power sector.
The DG also had this word of caution to offer.
It is critical for the country to fully understand the trade-off between the new investments needed in power generation and the reduction in coal mines production, as well as the eventual closure of some stations around 2040. As driven by different levels of emissions targets, I think that is actually quite important to take note of. In addition, the draft updated nationally determined contributions, which is currently under public consultation, sets a progressive, ambitious path in mitigation and adaptation, as well as part of our commitments under the Paris Climate Agreement. The South African Cabinet has approved the Economic Reconstruction and Recovery Plan with the green economy and also a green stimulus playing a central role in our collective effort to claw back and also to build better forward from the devastating effects of the COVID-19 pandemic. Energy security is at the center of this recovery plan, with a requirement of reliable, affordable, and clear energy sources, as well as long-term sustainable jobs.
Advocate Mokoena then shared some of the developments that the South African government are working on.
We are making a steady progress on our hydrogen society roadmap The roadmap is meant to set out a vision for an inclusive hydrogen society in South Africa so that an enabling compact between industry, labor, community, and government can be developed. We are finalizing the South African Renewable Energy Master Plan that, amongst others, seeks to coordinate the renewable energy requirements for South Africa to become a globally significant renewable energy producer, and importantly, for the industrialization and also employment.
And when it came to the energy transition, this is what he had to say.
The NDP therefore also commits that our energy transition must, in the first instance, be a just transition, which creates a more inclusive society, creates job opportunities for more people, and leaves no one behind. South Africa has established a Presidential Climate Change Commission and is further developing a just energy transition roadmap, which will seek to maximize the potential of these advantages, but also decisively mitigate the negative effects of the transitions, cementing a common vision for both affected and impacted stakeholders. As we conclude, we are alive to the reality that the evolution of just energy transition in South Africa will require balanced, integrated, enhanced, and innovative international collaboration at both technical and financial levels. Ambition and progress is possible, but remains highly dependent on the requisite policy enablers and also financial as well as technical support that must be available, especially to developing countries, as part of the rules-based global governance order.
We then heard from Sabine Dalomo, CEO of Siemens South Africa, and Mary Warlick, Executive Deputy Director of the IEA, as they talked energy transition and the newly released IEA Energy Transition Roadmap, Net Zero by 2050. You can listen to these in one of our upcoming podcasts. The panel discussion then closed off the keynote session, and it featured input from Sabine Dalomo, the CEO of Siemens South Africa, Max Jarrett, African Program Manager, International Energy Agency, and Abel Teller, the Secretary General of APUA. This session is shared here in its entirety and is moderated by journalist and broadcaster Fifi Peters.
Max, I would like to begin with you here, particularly following the report from the IEA, which many will be looking at closely as they try to craft their individual roadmaps to a net zero. What do you say to people that say that Africa's transition needs to follow that of the rest of the world?
Well, that is also IEA's understanding. The roadmap is a global roadmap, but doesn't present one single pathway. It says what we as a global community will have to do if all these commitments that countries large and small have made about net zero by 2050, those who have made them, are to be met. This is what it's going to take globally. But even if you disaggregate that, of course, we have countries which are the largest and historic emitters. They will have to go closer to net zero faster. Africa, we all know the history. We all know where we are in terms of access and use of modern energy. We have certain things on the continent that we need to do and need to be able to do in the time. But that's being said, though, we also have on this continent made pledges to move to decarbonize our energy systems as fast as possible. So it's not an issue of saying, you know, we're totally out of the net zero game. You know, however, the pathways for Africa as a region and also individual African countries will, of course, be different. If you were even to compare within the continent, South Africa with, say, Niger, you know, where access to electricity there is, it's so much lower than South Africa, access to modern energy, clean cooking and so forth. So what South Africa would have to do would be different than Niger, in the same way that the pacing of South Africa's transition would be different than the United States or China or India. So I think that one has to understand that. So, and also when people hear this report, I advise everyone to read it, the IEA Net Zero Roadmap, because there's been a lot of media about certain things that have been picked up out of it, which of course people should pick these things up because it's something the IEA has reported on. But out of the 400 milestones, it's not just the milestones related to fossil fuel investments and things like that that are necessary. The whole thing, the whole package needs to be looked at. And as part of that, also issues around behavioral change, how we think about, you know, how we use energy going forward into the future is very important. So in that sense, just to come back to what I was saying, it's Africa's is of course going to have to chart its pathways differently towards meeting its commitments, because these are commitments that have been made by African countries. But at the same time, though, the IEA has presented a global context of what collectively as humanity we're going to need to do to get to where we say we want to go.
All right, so a collective roadmap that is does also allow for some room to tailor the solutions towards the specific continent, in this case, Africa. And Engineer Abel, I'm interested in the feeling within the corridors of APUA to the report, so to the energy transition conversation as it does pertain to Africa. Should it be materially different to what is happening elsewhere in the world? Or, as Max has alluded to, it's a collective system and it's a collective procedure that we all need to follow.
Thank you, Fifi. I think that, like Max started saying, that Africa have challenges. The challenges to stick to transition, the energy transition, is the prevailing climate challenges in some country where you cannot rely on 100% solar and wind or 100% other intermittent resources. Africa need to industrialize. The only way to come out of poverty is to have local industry. To power industry, you need basic load. Basic load needs stable and reliable energy generation. So there are some clean. Africa is endowed with abundant fossil and renewable energy resources. For this, using clean gas will be entering our generation for 120 years. When the basic load will ensure us integrating renewable wisely. So our paths will be different because we need to industrialize before, and Africa is diverse. When we are talking about some country, we have around 100% access, and other country 5%. The country having 100% in the northern part are fighting now for how to smart grid, smart management of the grid. But the country where raising demand, they are struggling to have light. So lightning and power Africa both together. We should miss technology. So our path is different, is African path. And Africa is diverse. The country have not the same level of development. So we will combine this. Our way to the transition is a little different than other one.
And I mean, on the issue of technology that you have highlighted, Sabine, if I just bring you in here, as digitalization is one of the components of that energy transition, and as a technology player in the space, how do you think that technology can be better utilized to progress the continent's energy transition?
Well, thank you, Fifi. And look, as Siemens, we obviously believe in technology, and we see specifically the 5Ds as the major aspect of transition into a green energy scenario. And when we talk about the 5Ds, we talk about decarbonization, digitalization, decentralization, democratization, as well as deregulation. And let me come to each of them with some of the aspects of where we believe we can make a difference. So if you look at particular decarbonization, which in the context of COVID-19 and the developments over the last 15 months, it has shown that the world can do this much less CO2 emissions over the industrial applications, as we have seen the output in 2020 was significantly lower, and actually countries made their commitment already partially to the climate agreement from 2015 in Paris. But what is important when it comes to decarbonization particular, if we don't do anything about it, we will not be able to meet our target of limiting the warming by 1.5%, what would mean there will be a significant impact on the global economy. And that is estimated with up to 18% for the global economy if we don't mitigate the current increase in climate global warming. So when we then also look at the economies, which will get relatively easy out of such a scenario being impacted out of the negative effects out of climate change, what means, you know, unpredictable weather conditions, you know, damage to crops, damage to property, and other way, or not being able to farm at all because there is not sufficient rain available because of the changing in the weather pattern. Then you will see that particularly the northern countries like the US, Europe, and particularly North Europe, but also to a large extent China, they're well positioned because they already have, you know, the financial strength to come over such kind of hazard to their economies. But when we look at the Global South and the developing countries, and South Africa will be one of the countries hardest hit in this context, we see that we need to look at alternatives to particular offset the increase in carbon emission on the African continent. Because what we do see is that largely, if you think about households in Africa, many of them which are not connected to the grid, but even also partially in South Africa because of affordability, they use wood for cooking and heating, and subsequent they contribute to a higher deforestation. So we believe that particular solar energy, which is relatively fast deployable, which has a good efficiency on the African continent, because we have a lot of exposure on the PV side and on the sun radiation, that really could be a game changer for Africa, because it's also sizable in a contractual point of view. So you don't have this massive capital layouts. And therefore, we really believe that together with smart storage solution, it can be a significant difference to the outlook on the African continent, and we can be a contributor to the global economy in a positive way when we look at the CO2 emission going forward. On the decentralization, as I already mentioned, PV is clearly one solution to also decentralize the electricity and reduce the cost for providing electricity, because you know, and Eskom will know that best, how expensive it is to run a grid and to run long overhead lines in countries which have large land mass, and also where potentially the consumption and the production of electricity is very much detached from each other. So decentralization is possible, and we believe in the power of microgrids, which are then can be scaled to a kind of a virtual power plant through digital technology, what we call the microgrid controller, by which you can bring several of them together and manage the output, but also the demand side, and can supplement potentially this battery storage. And particular, if you look at new energy solution, like for instance, you have EV vehicles or other applications in that transport environment, you want to have these kind of resources on energy decentralized to the point of where the consumer will offtake that resource. And we are very happy to see that the minister, particularly in South Africa, has legislated that for up to 10 megawatt, you would have been able now to have a self-generation opportunity without requiring licensing agreements. But you know, for a real business application, if you talk about automotive, if you talk about food and beverage, which are fundamental industries for South Africa and the African continent, but also particular mining. And here you see that 10 megawatts are just not sufficient enough to give a redundancy for these kind of industries and really help or run their plant effectively. So hence, there is currently a strong push, which we would see to increase that limit to maybe 50 megawatts. Democratization, as I said, it's really around making renewable energies available for the broader population, and having access to electricity is really so vital, because first of all, you do avoid the aspect, as I outlined before, of further deforestation, which is obviously a huge problem for the African continent. On the other hand, you avoid significant health hazards by, you know, cooking and burning wood in small confined spaces, which obviously is a health hazard. And lastly, I mean, it will also significantly change the life of women, because often women are the subjects to collect wood for the household. So here we believe that the availability, and coming back to it, microgrids can make a significant impact in changing the way on how the African society, and even in South Africa, how that is lived. And digitalization, as mentioned, we do believe in the power of microgrids. Therefore, you have the possibility through technology, which we call a grid edge, to also manage the outputs and the consumption. So you would potentially also be able to have power users being prosumers, as we call them, the ones which basically produce and consume electricity, and they would be able to supplement through digital technology electricity into the national grid of the countries. That obviously requires investment into digital infrastructures, but we believe at what we see in the last 15 months since COVID has arrived on the shores of the African continent, that Africa has leapfrogged into a digital technology at least 5 years ahead because of COVID, and therefore we don't see that could be a hold up, and it really would improve as well the availability of electricity in many countries on the African continent. And lastly, deregulation. In Africa, we see, and in South Africa, that the energy sector is largely regulated by government, by regulations around, you know, providing affordable electricity to the population, and hence having not sufficient private players in the market, it makes it intransparent, and it also makes it slow. And therefore, having the energy market opened up for private players in the production, in the generation side, but also potentially in the management of some of the electricity components, is really vital to make sure that we get the most cost-optimized output for the individual countries, but also make sure that it's based on, you know, performance-based KPIs, which also automatically will reduce the cost of electricity. So we believe that is absolutely vital, and we're pleased to hear, specifically also on the ESCOM side, that the decentralization of the bundling of the ESCOM organization into generation, transmission and distribution is ongoing, and we look forward to see that change in South Africa.
Thank you, Sabine. Just staying with the role that technology is going to play in this transition. Max, often when you talk about technology, it is accompanied with the potential displacement of jobs. And this is why we have seen quite a bit of resistance in the sector, the energy sector here in Africa, in adopting some of the digitalization that will make our transition obviously a lot more efficient and effective. What is your view on the man versus machines debate as it pertains to a process that does need to happen and, of course, at a much pace?
I think we have to always acknowledge concerns about labor being displaced by capital bringing in technology. That's happened time over time. But that's often, if we know, I mean, I'm an economic historian by academic training. And if you look back over the transformations in most parts of the world, including Africa, over, say, the last 500 years, the first phase of the technology has often displaced whoever was doing that before. But then as economies grow, the pie grows, and you need more people to use the machines and run the machines. So I think in this particular case, if we're talking about the energy sector transformation, I understand the concerns. And I think that maybe in the short term, in some places, human beings might be displaced by technology and by machines. But I think if we get this right, and hopefully we will, and we put people at the center of the transformations that we want to see take place, we start thinking already now about what kind of research and innovations that go that can kind of absorb or involve retraining of human capital. Not just, I don't want to just talk about labor, human capital that can meet the increases of the digital space in energy, of new technologies and so forth. So yes, it's valid to be concerned, but I don't think it should be a long-term concern. And it's with the policymakers, with the financiers and others to make sure that we plan holistically now for this transformation to ensure that people remain at the center and we make sure not just that we secure jobs, because often jobs may have to change from different parts of the economy to the other, but we ensure that we grow the energy sector, the cleaner, decarbonized energy sector, to ensure that all these young people who are coming into the job market, they'll be able to get jobs in this sector. So it's not just miners we're concerned about. We are also concerned about retraining miners to be something else, not just miners in the future, who can then work in, you know, in the solar space, in the wind space. There's many things around there with some of the similar skills that you have for in the kind of most attractive space industry linked to energy. You could then also transform into valuable jobs and decent jobs in the new energy sector.
And Engineer Abel, anything to add from your side in terms of the role of technology in the transition?
The role of technology, we have all its sense in what we are doing now is working to not only develop the regional network, but also integrate the system. So we just today launched the African Single Electricity Market. We are able to use the best energy, clean energy in a region to power other regions who have less clean energy. So the technology that we are aiming to do is how to interconnect and use smartly grid. So the electrification of Africa, having universal access, will be based in the best option. So with this single electricity market, we will be able to choose the best clean technology, the energy at the best price at every moment. So this will be the biggest electricity market in the world. 2 billion people consuming electricity on a network, that is great. So for us, digitalization have a very, very important meaning. So the side to compare with is China. Without digitalization, China cannot power this big country. Same for Africa.
And it would be a very welcome development. I mean, the picture that you're talking about, in which or so many people on the continent actually have access to electricity, given the fact that a lot of people do not at this stage. But let's just take a step back. And Sabine, just to bring you back into the conversation for a better understanding of, you know, as a private sector player like Siemens, what kind of opportunities are you seeing for the continent in its energy transition?
Well, look, the opportunities within the energy transition for Africa really lies in the fact that Africa will have participated in the global megatrends, which urbanization, yeah, we will have a significant number of Africans living in urban centers by 2050. It is as well the fact of that globalization will still continue. Also, we do see that there is a reduction because of, you know, interest developing due to some trade wars between individual countries. But on the positive side, as of 1st of January, the African Continental Free Trade Agreement came in. And, you know, if you want to really deliver on these values of the African Continental Free Trade Agreement, that would require you would industrialize Africa, and therefore you would need energy, particular and distributed energy to the locations of where the manufacturing could take place or where the mining takes place. If you think about, you know, commodities which are available specifically on the southern tip of Africa, which you potentially can use for battery storage manufacturing side. So you do need to have electricity distributed into these regions, and that relatively fast to also deliver to the expectations. And then largely we will have a massive a demographic change. We will have more young people in there. They want to have a cell phone, they want to have jobs, they want to have food, and therefore there is quite a number of business was in the field of everything what is on the consumer side, be it ICT, but also in food and beverage, where energy is required in order to provide the service or to be able to obviously produce the food which is needed. As said, the effect of climate change will be hardest felt by the developing countries, in particular by the African continent. And in order to offset that, we have a strong obligation to make sure that we tap into the opportunities of renewable energies. And when we look then as well into a global space, particular around what the European transition will be past COVID, it will be largely green and digital. And therefore, it is already established that if investment is made into developing countries in green economies, it will have a much more positive impact on the overall climate target than investing more money into already developed economies, but also economies which can't potentially make such a huge impact, say, on a PV installation. But we also believe that particularly when we look at Africa, there is a huge opportunity that Africa, and COVID has shown it, that we can leapfrog in technologies, that we can produce our own protective equipment in order to make sure our people on the continent are safe. And we did that in a very, very short period of time. And so therefore also leapfrogging into technologies like, for instance, e-mobility in African countries. And we have our flagship project in Kigali as together with Volkswagen, by which we operate a small fleet of e-vehicles, because it is unlikely that the African population will be able to afford all their own car in a very short future. And it is important that we still offer them a safe and affordable transport. So there we really see some opportunities, but it comes with a twist that it also requires the respective legislation to be put in place to avoid that Africa as a dumping ground for everything else what is high CO2 emitting in other countries, be it cars, but also potential industrial processes which might be offshore to the continent. And I believe the African Continental Free Trade Agreement can be a good enabler to avoid these. On the other hand, which we haven't really implemented lots in Africa, is around smart buildings. And here, if you think about airports, if you think about malls, if you think about any other public spaces, hospital, offices of the municipalities or the state, people want to be safe when they're going to these spaces, and managing the flow of people and the availability of space, but also heating and cooling most effectively, that definitely can reduce on one hand the energy consumption, and on the other hand can give really ideas on safety for people visiting these kind of areas.
Excellent. And of course, often realizing or standing in the way of realizing those opportunities is the lack of funding. And Max, thoughts here with regards to how we do address the funding challenges of the path that we're trying to forge on, especially as the pandemic right now has seen a lot of governments max out their credit cards, which were already on overdraft even before entering the crisis. What's your solution or your proposal to addressing the funding challenge for African countries as well as utilities?
Look, first to say that I don't have any kind of magic bullet myself in terms of proposal or solution, but I do know that the solution will have to involve a massive scale up of investment in the areas that Africa needs. Those who say they want to work and partner with Africa in helping us accelerate our clean energy transitions, accelerate access, have to really put money in the game, not just at the project level. I'm talking massive scale investments from private sector, public-private partnerships, and so forth. But that being said, as our Deputy Executive Director said earlier in the opening remarks today, we're about to launch a major report tomorrow, Wednesday, the 9th of June, on financing investment, energy investments in emerging markets and developing economies. And in that, I encourage all listening to go and download that report, because in that report, there'll be some very distinct, clear proposals about what's needed globally. But of course, there are aspects pertaining there to Africa, you know, to really move this agenda forward. But to come back to what I was saying, the key thing is we've really got to put money in the game now. We've got to scale up. And that's just as the engineer was saying regarding the technology and the smart grids and so forth, we're doing some work right now. We're just starting at IEA regarding geospatial data analysis, looking at the energy space, energy kind of sector in different parts of Africa. So you can know where is it you're best going to be able to meet access needs by rolling out the grid. Where do you need it by mini grids? Where do you need it by different off-grid solutions? And what I like to say is that once you have that kind of mapping at a policy level, you can share that with the financial sector. So where do the investments need to go for different parts of the energy system? So we need to scale up, we need to be serious, more serious than we've been so far, and we're gonna do it fast.
Certainly. And engineer, your take on addressing the funding challenge and perhaps the role of the international community and international financiers in addressing this particular challenge, but also the broader constraints at this moment, as you see it, to Africa's energy transition.
Thank you, Fifi. We need our financial partners to change paradigm in terms of assessment related to project in Africa. Risk assessment, risk evaluation. We need them to change paradigm, because the cycle of realization of implementation of the project are too long. When you take 5 to 10 years for a project to reach the financial close, when you start implementation, the data that you have are already not the same on the ground. Because economic growth, 5-6%, some countries having 2-digit growth of the population. Now, what we are doing with our partner, the World Bank and African Development Bank, APOA is setting the utility performance and behavior for every time to give message to our partner. In this country, the utility have this performance, technology, electrical performance, distribution, loss reduction, cost recovery, and governance. For the first time, we'll give the governance situation of every power utility. The report that we are issuing next month with the World Bank, we realize in 77 utility from Cape Verde to Seychelles, all utility in Africa, we cover all utility. We are talking about governance, how the utility is ruled, to give them confidence, to say what is happening really in every country, every utility, and those by the ministers. So if the board of utility have to change anything that the partner are not really confident with, they have the way to change it. This is a win-win situation. We need them to change the path of considering risk. We also giving our real state opportunity to say that if you invest, you will be guaranteed to have your money back. But if you need partner to come, change your way of management. This is the pattern that we are doing today. And this report is on based on 2020 data. The next will be based on 2022 data and so forth. So we'll be giving the real situation of power utility in Africa.
This is certainly a welcome development, as it does speak to a give and take, a kind of relationship. The governments or utilities are promising to, you know, lay the framework for a conducive environment. And I do like the emphasis that has been placed on governance, because we have seen a lack of governance on the continent, certainly causing a lot of leakages that has resulted in the lack of access to stable power that many of us are experiencing. Sabine, as we move the conversation forward, this energy transition that we're talking about, of course, it needs to be one that is just and one that is inclusive for all key stakeholders. Just your view on exactly how we achieve this, how we achieve or support a future forward transition that is also just.
Well, look, for Siemens, which we have done already in 2015, we committed to carbon neutrality within our production sites and our operating business by 2030. And I do believe that there are many more companies which are going the same way. If you look at the initiative of RE100, so where the biggest industrial companies, being in the food and beverage and in other industries, have committed themselves to be by 2030 carbon neutral. And I do believe this is very important, because if we want to attract foreign direct investment onto the continent, we need to give these companies the opportunity to invest into a market which is producing carbon neutral energy, so that they can have the carbon neutral footprint in their total value chain on the globe. And therefore, you need to be able to pick and choose from where do you get your electricity. Currently, in many of the countries on the continent, and particularly in South Africa, you don't have this option. You can't say, I want rather pay a few dollar or rand more, and I want to have green electricity, wind energy, or solar PV, but you would get whatever the grid provides, and that's currently, unfortunately, largely coal and diesel based, if you look at the broader aspect of the African continent, with some exceptions on the East African side. So managing particular the output of electricity, we believe, is absolutely vital for such a future transition. And that goes into intelligent grids, into smart grids, which really are an investment potential for the countries, but also making sure, you know, that electricity is not stolen, which is the non-technical losses, yeah, so that the electricity price on what you produce remains stable and affordable for everybody, and people are really encouraged to use then electricity which comes from a source provided rather by the utility, or if you call it a microgrid. But also on the other hand, decentralized energy systems, we believe, is absolutely vital going forward. And why is that so? If you think that many of the countries within the African Continental Free Trade Agreement will see their industrialization very much on the agricultural environment, and when we look at agricultural business, it's very much around making irrigation available so that the crops can grow. That you only can do if you have electricity. And now looking at the African landscape, many of these agricultural sites are in the inner of the land or in landlocked countries where we not necessarily have the opportunity to have these kind of resources of fossil fuel power stations, for instance, which in the context of the global scale, you see, we do not want to encourage. So therefore, to make that kind of proposition available for the broader population on the African continent, we do believe that decentralized energy system, particularly solar and wind with a storage solution, can be ideal to encourage people to make use of the resource, do also some form of skills development in the local society to make sure that a system is maintained and that basic electrical skills potentially are available. And you know, once you have that, an economy and a society will build on itself and will gain the access to the market. That is what we believe, and as Siemens, we are business to society. We have many, many projects on the African continent, be it in Ethiopia or here in South Africa or in Kigali, as mentioned, as just to highlight a few, by which we showcase that it's possible to run these kind of projects commercially viable, and that, you know, we just have to look at how to scale it up, find the potential partners and get going. So that's our commitment. And thank you so much, Fifi.
Thanks, Sabine. And of course, this is a question that all the speakers can weigh in on. And Abel, coming to you, in terms of what you think, or perhaps the members at UPUA are thinking about what a transition that is just looks like. What are the conversations taking place there?
You know, like I say, our power utility are at the level of development, are fitted to the level of development of the country. So we have a very different level of development. So we can fit to every utility level to bring them the solution corresponding to the level of the utility. And now, the benchmarking is not to leave the utility go their way, but to bring them like leapfrogging into the leapfrogging of Africa. So we need them to go very quickly, not to pass the same way that the first utility passed, to have the level of development. So the sharing of experience, the capacity building with the African Development Bank and the Friend Development Agency, we launched the African Network of Center of Excellency of Electricity, where the personnel of utility are trained in new technology to fast track the utility performance improving within utilities. So this, and exchange with our external partner, the Global Smart Energy Federation, Think Smart Grid, and all other partners that we have abroad, to allow them through a webinar and exchange of experience to know what is happening somewhere else, to be able to adapt to the utility to change, because we need that. We need to change the physiognomy of utility, and that is going very quickly today. I think of this benchmarking and exchange that we have with other developed utility, because APOA is in partner with all other association and develop and utility in development world. So that helps us to go very quickly.
And Max, your thoughts on the just transition and how it can best be achieved?
I think it must be just on a number of levels. First, at the global level, it has to be just. And there, I'd like to use the language that has already been agreed by the international community regarding common but differentiated responsibilities. This is some of the language that was used in the COP, the Paris Agreement of 2015. So that means that, you know, those who have been emitting the most for longest have to do certain things, whereas those who yet have to bring access to their people and to develop and transform economies have slightly different responsibilities. So it must be just at that level. The second thing is, I think, is really clear, is it must be just in terms of intergenerational. You know, those of a certain age have had benefits from certain types of energy. They need to make sure that they help to push the transformation so the younger generation coming can also benefit from the natural resources, clean air and so forth, and also have things that they need to, you know, to power the kind of entrepreneurial spirits and so forth that we have in Africa. Then also needs to be just equitable in terms of gender. And that's why I really want to talk about clean cooking and issues around that there, where you have, you know, African women and African girl children having to go spend so much of their time in their youth just to get sometimes firewood to come back and cook. Girls are doing this when they should be in school. Then you have our mothers and our aunties, you know, our sisters are cooking, and they're cooking with firewood and the whole kind of a health impact of that, whereas if they had an electric stove, you know, they wouldn't be getting the certain illnesses that they have from using that kind of more biomass type of cooking. So it needs to be just there as well. It also needs to be just in terms of the haves and the have-nots, in terms of where an economy is structured, you know, where you have, for example, maybe people at the bottom of the pyramid, so to speak, who are more involved in low, not so capital intensive jobs, more, you know, more in the labor. And they often are seen as the ones who are going to be the first to face the axe because of the transition. As I was saying earlier, we've got to make sure that, no, it's not just, not them that have to face it. It needs to be everyone in the society has to bear, you know, the costs and also reap the opportunities of the change. So justice in terms of, you know, where we are in terms of the political economy, I should say, of a country, you know, it shouldn't be that we're just seeing miners on the streets striking because they feel it's unfair to them and the bankers have it just as good as they had it before. So we need to be thinking in terms of make sure that everyone benefits from where we want to go.
I would like to highlight the 5 Ds that are critical to achieving energy transition. Of course, the 5 Ds being deregulation, decarbonization, decentralization, digitization, as well as democratization. Of those, Engineer Abel, and also Max, perhaps if you can come in here, which would you say would be most important for Africa in achieving our energy transition goals? Engineer Abel, if you begin, and then Max, you can follow after.
Okay. I think that on the way to ensure universal access, we are already working on decentralization and deregulation, because the access to give, just like to these 600 million people, we are using not only all technology, but all framework to be able to reach the last mile. So the central system is now working with other players, private players, SMEs, who are working toward those communities based on clean energy, because they don't have a need for high level of power. When we are talking about regulation, we have in Africa today a regulatory index which is issued every year by the African Development Bank to follow up how the regulation is progressing in Africa. So all this brings us to consider the digitalization as the main important challenge, because this is disruption technology. We are talking about disruption. How are we going from the traditional way of taking business to the modern way, where we have the grid, we have the off-grid system, we have the microgrid system? How can we combine all this? Another thing that when we are using clean energy, when we are talking about renewable energy energy integration to the grid is not a joke, because the grid stabilization is very important. So how are we combining all this without disrupting technology? No way. So digitalization is for us the most important D. What about democratization? Is that every country with its wealth is able to be more or less inclusive in terms of access to energy. But this is linked to the global planning of the country. What about digitalization is all we are concerned. For that, we say that the most important for us is a digitalization, because disruptive technology is on the way.
And then Max, which for you would be the most important D of the five for the continent?
Thanks, Fifi. For me, the big D, the most important D is decarbonization. In 2021, if we want to go towards transforming the energy systems in Africa and across the world, we've got to put decarbonization first. If we're focusing then on decarbonization, we think holistically, what kind of things do we need to do to make it an equitable transformation towards a decarbonized energy system? Then you need a democratization, digitalization, decentralization, all those others factor in. But first, in front, the hill we're going towards, the kind of the target is decarbonization. The target can't be digitalization. digitalization is part of it. I'm not disagreeing, Engineer Teller, it's important. But what we're trying to do is to decarbonize. You can't have a digitalized system where it's just oil wells that you're digitizing. You need to make sure that we're going towards a cleaner energy system, as we've all agreed globally. We're going to do it at different paces, different responsibilities, but we've got to decarbonize. So decarbonization is the big D.
Thanks for that very holistic response there, Max. And as we head towards the end of this panel discussion that we are having, I'd like to ask the panel for just their closing remarks and also some of the key takeaways that they're hoping a lot of the attendees will walk away with at the end of the conference. And Sabine, to begin with you, your closing remarks and key takeaways.
Okay. Yeah, looking at the most important part, which I take away from our discussion and engagement, it is really around that climate change does not know borders. And within Africa, we will be significantly exposed to the effects of global warming. And therefore, it is absolutely important to encourage this kind of new technologies, what means grid management, but also decentralized energy solutions to make sure that people have access. And that's really from my side the most important part which people should remember if you all want to have a future on this planet.
Thanks, Sabine. Engineer Abel, what do you think is most important that needs to be focused on in the next 3 days? And what are you hoping the key takeaways to be?
Okay, you have a continent heading to 2 billion in 2050. Half of 2 billion age of working age. Half of 2 billion living in cities. There, you need to think how to take all this data into account to build your system. Decentralized system, on-grid system, all should fit to this kind of development. So now our utility are going customer-centric. Not what we have to the customer, but what the customer wants. So the digitalization would help us to feed this path of development of Africa to be the utility of the future.
Thank you, sir. And last but not least, Max, your final thoughts.
We need to do a lot more. We need to do things better to get access to electricity to every single African. Engineer Teller was talking about 2 billion Africans rapidly urbanizing Africa. We're still not there yet. We have still over half a billion Africans today, 2021, do not have access to electricity. We've got to change that. And that's going to take money. That's going to take money. And that's also going to take holistic approaches. It's not one cap fits all, but also we need innovations. We need a new way of thinking. I know people say this all the time, but really we do. We need to think differently about how we're going to get to the scale up. It's not just projects. Off-grid is not the other. Off-grid is part of the integrated solutions that we need to see. The smart grids that Engineer Teller was talking about, that we need the single African electricity market. Let's make it happen. Now it's been set up. We have to make it happen fast. It's been too long talking about change in Africa, talking about transformation. We have the African Union. We have the African Development Bank. We've got countries signing up to things. We've got a very dynamic young population that needs this energy. We've got to get it to them now. and we've got to put the money in play to make it happen.
Thank you for joining us in this first in the series of podcasts in which we share content from the Enlit Africa Digital Event. We'll be back with more every Friday, and we'll be hosting our next digital event from the 26th to the 28th of October. You can find out more by visiting our website, enlit-africa.com. Join us next week when we discuss how LPG could aid in Africa's energy transition.